Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our Wednesday night Beyond Today Bible studies here at the home office of the United Church of God. We have a nice crowd here this evening in the office facility. And to all of you that are online watching this live and others that will be joining us at another time, we welcome you to the series of studies that we are now into. I think this is the second in the series that we are doing on the subject of walking with God. Tonight we're going to talk about Abraham. And that character from the Bible, one of the most eminent names from the Bible, I think a story everyone knows. Hopefully we'll walk away tonight with something that we have not yet perhaps thought about in regard to Abraham and how he walked with God as he was a friend of God. I'll go ahead and ask God's blessing on the Bible study. You can remain seated here, and if you'll just bow your heads, we'll get started then. Our Father in heaven, our great God, we bow to your holy presence and to your throne. Thank you for this evening and this Bible study. For those who've come here to be a part of it here in Cincinnati, for those who are online with us and tuning in, thank you, Father, for the facilities and for the technology that makes this possible to be able to reach a large number of people with a message that we hope will help us all in our relationship with you, the walk that we have with you in our daily lives. So, Father, I pray that you would be with us tonight. Your Spirit would guide what is said, the hearing, the understanding. Father, bless this wherever it goes and to whomever and whatever may be in our lives and minds at this time, that we would find something that is necessary to help us in our relationship with you. We thank you. We ask all of this, Father, in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen. We'll be having another study in 2 weeks, and I believe Steve Myers will be dealing with that one. But tonight we are going to be talking about the subject of Abraham and his role as a friend of God and the walk that he had with God. This series we have designed here is to help us all think about the daily relationship that we have and putting our hearts and our minds into a relationship with God in this journey we call life and the calling that God has given to each of us. We're right now fully into summer. We've got thunderstorms about every night, here, at least here in Ohio. We had some tornadoes over in Indiana last night. But summer's fully arrived, and it is a time of long days, vacations. We are in that period of time between the festivals. We've had just Pentecost just a little more than 2 weeks ago, and it'll be several weeks until we come back together for the Feast of Trumpets, the fall festivals. So this summer period, if you look at it in terms of the how the holy days teach and line up, it is a time when there is a period, in a sense, as the first fruits are maturing and growing toward the harvest of the fall. And in this period of time, I've always looked at this period as a kind of a metaphor for the long and patient journey that we make toward the kingdom of God in our lives. And it's fitting that we look at Abraham tonight, because Abraham had a long journey. He had to develop a great deal of patience, and he went through a number of stages in his relationship with God. And I think that life and the example that we have from the book of Genesis and other references in scriptures gives us some very good insight for us to consider in our own walk with God and what we can learn about that. So let's jump into that tonight and let's see what we can learn in terms of Abraham. And it's such a big subject, obviously, in a one-hour study, we're not going to be exhaustive in our approach toward his life. And I will not even cover all the details and even some of the big ticket items. But I do hope that we will at least gain a bit better appreciation for not only some of the big things that he did, but also some of the small things that the scriptures tell us about Abraham and relate that to our lives. If you would, please turn over to Isaiah chapter 41. And let's look at what is said here by the prophet about Abraham, a familiar statement that is repeated in James chapter 2. But I thought I would read it out of Isaiah tonight. God said to Israel in verse 8 of Isaiah 41, he said, "You, Israel, are my shepherd, or my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the descendants of Abraham, my friend." Abraham has that distinction of being called a friend of God, my friend. It's quite a distinction. one that we might all wish that we could have as well. You, he says, as he continues talking to Israel, whom I have taken from the ends of the earth and called from its farthest regions and said to you, you are my servant. I have chosen you and have not cast you away. And so God chose Israel, just as he had chosen Abraham, their forefather, and he has chosen us. God says this here in the context of a man who was taken from a far country and developed a relationship with God as a friend of God. We are told in the scriptures that Abraham believed God, that it was credited to him as righteousness through the actions that he did. We find a correlation with that. If you look over in Romans chapter 4, in verse 1, and all that he did, whether it was the taking of his son Isaac up on Mount Moriah, or leaving his home and going to the land of Canaan, or waiting patiently for God to deliver on his promises. Paul writes about this. He says, what shall we say that Abraham our father has found according to the flesh? For if Abraham was justified by works, he has something to boast about, but not before God. For what does the Scripture say? Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness. Now to him who works, the wages are not counted as grace, but as debt. So what Abraham did was credited as righteousness to him in God's plan and in God's purpose. And so we can learn from these examples. Let's turn back over to Genesis chapter 12, and we will begin looking at what exactly we are dealing with in this life of this man that looms quite large in the Bible as the father of the faithful. Paul spends some time talking about Abraham in Romans. Hebrews 11 talks about Abraham. He stands quite large in this juncture in Genesis chapter 12, where he comes on the scene as the plan of God kind of narrows down to one man and what God begins to do with one man and the descendants that would come from Abraham. But Abraham's story takes up a large section here of the book of Genesis. And it begins in verse 1, as he is known as Abram. And I'll skip the formalities. I'll just go ahead and refer to him as Abraham rather than the Abram as he is here. His name is changed at a later date. But Abraham lived in the area of what is now Iraq. And his family had gone up into verse 32 chapter 11. They had migrated up into the northern part of, again, what is Iraq, and that is to the city of Haran, H-A-R-A-N. We don't have the means of projecting a map of modern-day Iraq on this, but I hope that you could, at least in your mind's eye, because Iraq is one of those nations that's in the news right now with what's going on over there and what we have been involved with for the last 12 years since we went into Iran in 2003 and overthrew Saddam Hussein. But that's the very region where Abraham came from, between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers. And actually, where Abraham was when he got this call from God in Haran, he's up in the northern part of what is Iraq today, exactly where, if you're following the news with this Islamic extremist group that has now begun to dismantle the modern state of Iraq and is creating quite a bit of chaos, the area of their strength and their power in the northern part of Iraq right now is exactly where Abraham was when God called him. All right. Just as another aside, you hear the city called Mosul in northern Iraq. You know what city that is? It's Nineveh. It's near Nineveh, the ancient ruins of Nineveh. So when you hear the fighting going on in Mosul, well, that has been captured. That's Nineveh. So these are the places that relate to what we know from the accounts in the Bible. But that's exactly where Abraham is when he gets this call from God. That's his home territory. And God calls him here, and he tells him to get out of your country, from your family, from your father's house, to a land that I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. I will bless you and make your name great, and you shall be a blessing, and I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse him who curses you, and in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. This is where the covenant relationship begins with Abraham and the promises that will expand, and we'll just note even a bit of that expansion tonight. But it begins with this calling to a man who was very likely a merchant in the settled regions, as it were, at the time of Haran and that area of Mesopotamia. Abraham was not what he became in many ways. He was certainly not a man of strong faith. That faith developed. He was not the man with the herds and the servants that we will see that came later. He was likely among a group of merchants because it was a settled, more urban area where he was. And what he is being called and challenged to go to is a completely different place, but also a completely different life. And this was not something that was a part of life even at that time for a man to do that. We think about a career change today. We think about somebody moving across the United States or even to an international posting for a company, and that's nothing in our culture today. For Abraham to have done what he did was completely out of the norm. There's a book that I read a number of years ago that I want to read just a little bit about what Abraham did as this one author describes it. It's a book called The Gifts of the Jews by Thomas Cahill. How a Tribe of Desert Nomads Changed the Way Everyone Thinks and Feels. It's an interesting series of books that Thomas Cahill's written called The Hinges of History. And this one dealt with the Jews. And he's got a lot right. He's got a few things that we might take issue with. But the way he puts this particular episode is quite instructive because as he writes about what is in these first few verses of Genesis 12, and what Abraham did, here's what he said. He said the phrase that where Abraham went in verse 4, or Abraham departed as the Lord had spoken to him and Lot with him. Those two words, Abraham departed, or Abraham went, he says, are two of the boldest words in all literature. Abraham went. They signal a complete departure from everything that has gone before. In the long evolution of culture and sensibility. Out of Sumer, the area of where Abraham was, civilized repository of the predictable, comes a man who does not know where he's going, but goes forth into the unknown wilderness under the prompting of his God. Out of Mesopotamia, home of canny, self-serving merchants who use their gods to ensure prosperity and favor, comes a wealthy caravan with no material goal. Out of ancient humanity, which from the dim beginnings of its consciousness has read its eternal truths in the stars, comes a party of people traveling by no known compass. Out of the human race, which knows in its bones that all its striving must end in death, comes a leader who says he has been given an impossible promise. Out of mortal imagination comes a dream of something new, something better, something yet to happen, something in the future. I think the way he puts that is quite well. Abraham and his party with Lot and his family, they were walking by no known compass of that day and age when they departed and went to this land that God said that he would show to them. And that is a remarkable step that takes place with Abraham. And it gives us a setting to consider what we have done as well. What Abraham did took a great deal of courage. A great deal of courage. I'll go ahead and put this word up here because it's a word we'll focus on at least as we describe Abraham. And what it takes to walk with God. Courage. Abraham doesn't yet have the full faith that will make him be known as the father of the faithful. That's going to have to develop. But he does have a measure of courage. How did he know what to do? How did God talk with him? Most feel that it was a voice. There's no reference to some type of an appearance of him talking to God face to face. He very likely heard a voice. Now, if you and I heard a voice today, how would we respond to that voice? Well, we have a different means by which God communicates with us than he did in the time of Abraham. But regardless, the fact that he responded in the way that he did speaks to the courage that that he had. And he acted decisively. He was a personally brave and courageous man to do what he did. To leave his family, and the account gives us no indication that he ever saw them again. Certainly that he would have gone back. Later when he sends for a wife for his son Isaac, he sends a servant back to his home to do that. He didn't go and do it himself. You and I may be away from family, not living next to family, but we make periodic trips to go and visit with them. And we will have reunions, and we will see our family in most cases. That's not the case of what happened here. But what this does when it comes down to you and I is to cause us to ask some questions about the leaving that we did when we responded to the calling of God. When we decided to do what God showed we had to do, keep the Sabbath, join His church, begin to fellowship with a different group of people who would have been a group of people that in most other circumstances we would have never been around. We would have never crossed paths. When we first started attending church, my mother did back in 1962, 63, we drove through the country into a place in southern Illinois, small town, and the church was meeting in an Oddfellows Hall. And I remember thinking, after getting acquainted with some of them and the church, and everybody joked about this, so it was just nothing bad. It was an appropriate place. But we begin to fellowship with a different group of people. And that's what we have done, and a whole different way of life, and to define us in that way. And that takes a personal amount of courage. Sometimes I think we forget what it takes for a person to step away from all that is known and familiar in their life and to walk through the doors of the Church of God on a Sabbath day or to attend the Feast of Tabernacles. It's been so long since most of us did it, we take it for granted now. But today in 2014, for a new person who finds out about the Sabbath, becomes acquainted with the United Church of God, to take that step into a room full of people they don't know, that takes courage, I think. But I think we forget about that. Now, what I'd like for us to do, I'm going to be putting on the board a number of different thoughts here tonight. I'm going to call them thought. You can call them a thought. I put down as I was writing this, I'm just ponder this for a moment, all right? Nobody uses the word ponder today, but I do, at least here tonight. So here's ponder number one, all right? Think about this for a moment. Was there a moment in your life when you made a decision to step out in faith and follow God, even today? Beyond our calling that was initially, but another part of our life for us to step into a different relationship and make a decision to step out in faith. Think about that. Write it down. And think about that. It might give you something to consider. Where we have been asked to do something that stretches us, that is not our norm and in our comfort zone, that can result in something good and a measure of personal spiritual growth as we have to work with people, as we have to maybe take on a new assignment. A person's asked to have a speaking assignment at a club. Maybe it's a woman giving a talk about something going on in her life, in some of our women's clubs, ladies do. And it's an uncomfortable situation. We have summer camps, and somebody thinks, well, maybe I can contribute at the summer camp. And to do so requires stepping into a different role. It might be some area of service in the church. It may be some act of even more deeper dedicated faith that we have to do, and we don't know where it's going to take us. We don't know how it's going to wind up. In Hebrews 11, hold your place here, as Hebrews 11 talks about Abraham, remember what it says about him and when he left? Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 8. It says, "By faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. He went out not knowing where he was going." He didn't know where he was going. As Cahill puts it in his book, that this group walked by no known compass. There were no bearings on it, and there was no GPS coordinates. In 2 hours and 45 minutes, you will be at your destination. After you make every right and left turn and bend that she tells you on your GPS. Abraham didn't have that. And we don't always have that when we step out into a new area of faith in our life. It takes courage to step out in faith, just like Abraham did. So I want you to think about a moment in your life when you had to face a decision to step out in faith and to follow where God was leading and taking you. We see Abraham in this opening scene, not having a fully formed faith, and yet he begins to obey God. You know, when you and I came into the church and through our years, our faith took a period of time to form by degree as well. When you look at what Abraham did here in verse 10 of chapter 12 of Genesis, he comes into the land that God has promised him, which is the land of Canaan, the modern state of Israel. But after a period of time, there came a famine, verse 10. And Abraham went down into Egypt to live there, for the famine was severe in the land. And then you know the story. He persuades Sarah to lie to Pharaoh that she's not his wife. Okay? Now that's real faith, isn't it? Lie. Honey, we're going to cross the border here, and I want you to kind of, here's the story. Let's get our story straight. You're not my wife. First of all, he was going down into Egypt. No servants of God really wanted to go into Egypt. You search the Bible, they wanted to get out of Egypt. And God's instruction was always to avoid Egypt. But here Abraham, at the beginning of his life of faith, he goes into Egypt when it gets tough, when there's a famine in the land. He goes into Egypt, which is a well-ordered urban society, well-defined food, predictability. He's not living by his wits, and he's not living by his hand up in this undeveloped wilderness of the land of Canaan. They've got Costco's in Egypt, Jungle Gyms in Egypt, everything that he wants, leeks and garlics. And he goes down there. And he gets, you know, into the situation where they have to lie. But at this point in the story, he's moving and living more on his wits than by his faith. And that's not good, but it's part of the process of learning. God hasn't abandoned him, just as he doesn't us when we get into those situations. In fact, when you look through the story and you come down to chapter 13 and look at verses 1 and 2, Abraham went up from Egypt, finally, when he got Sarah back, and he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him, to the south, into the southern areas of the land. And Abraham, it says, was very rich in livestock, silver, and in gold. Now, Abraham was no dummy. He's a very shrewd man. He didn't enter, he left Egypt better off than he went in. Okay? How many trips do you and I take where we come back with more than we started with? Well, that's really what is being described here. He says, you know, Pharaoh can't get him out of there quick enough. And Abraham leaves a richer man. So this tells us that Abraham is a man who knows how to handle a Pharaoh of Egypt. Gives you a little bit of insight into the type of person that he was. I've never seen anybody in any portrayal in any film about Abraham that to me is credible. In fact, Abraham has probably been always the worst portrayal I mean, at least Charlton Heston with Moses was something that you might want to emulate, all right? But I've never seen any character portrayal of Abraham as one that comes anywhere near the type of man that he really must have been. And Sarah, some of the apocryphal stories of her indicate that she would have likely been a very beautiful woman. Some feel, I think it's Josephus, that says that she was a princess or of some type of royal lineage. But why else would a pharaoh want her, all right? Pharaoh had his choice of his own women, and he wouldn't have been drawn to her unless she was. So he comes back into the land. Lot is still with him. Now in chapter 13 of Genesis, we find that there's a dispute between Abraham and his nephew Lot and their herdsmen. And the land is, in verse 6, is not able to support them. It's just not enough there. So their possessions are so great, their herds, that they couldn't dwell together. There's conflict between the herdsmen of Abraham and Lot. And so Abraham goes to him with a solution. He says, look, we don't need this conflict between us. The whole land is spread out. You choose. Separate from me in verse 9. Please separate from me. If you take the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll take the left. So Lot lifts up his eyes, saw that the plain of the Jordan, which would have been, he would have been looking down over the plain of the Jordan. He saw that it was very fruitful, and it was like a garden. And so he chose that, and there he went. And Abraham and Lot come to a parting at this particular point in time. When this happens, God expands his promise to Abraham. If you look down at verse 14, God said to Abraham after this separation, lift your eyes now and look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, and westward, for all the land which you see, I will give to you and your descendants forever. And I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if a man could number the dust of the earth, then your descendants also could be numbered. Now that's quite a lot of numbering, as the dust of the earth, which obviously can't be numbered. And so the descendants of Abraham, in a sense, are innumerable, uncountable. So he moved his tent. He said, arise, go through the length of the land and its width, and for I give it to you. So Abram moved his tent, went and dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and he there and built an altar there to the Lord. Think about this. He brought his nephew Lot with him from Haran. Why? Possibly he didn't have any children. Maybe that Lot was going to be the one to inherit. Maybe he was like a son to Abraham. It's possible. Now they separate. Now, these are two individuals that had to go their own separate ways. They were both righteous men. I mean, Lot is called, even after all his escapades, Righteous Lot, as the ending account that we have in the Bible. Sodom and Gomorrah, Lot's wife turns into a pillar of salt. He's with his daughters. You know the story there. It's not a pleasant story. It's not your perfect story as to what happens with Lot. But there's no perfect story in the Bible except one, and that's Jesus Christ. But the people of faith took some circuitous routes toward that. And as we've already seen, Abraham is not perfect in his faith as well. But they were both righteous men seeking, as they knew, to do what was right. But they both had some certain contradictions. But what's interesting to consider is that they both had to go their own path from this point forward. We go on with Lot's story, and of course Abraham's story goes on as well. But for them to develop, they had to part company and go separate ways. I read a book in the last year and a half called Necessary Endings. It was the name of the book. It was a book that talked about the fact that there are certain relationships that will come in life where there will be a necessary ending. And this, it was not talking about marriage, but it was talking about employer-employee relationships, primarily, and how to negotiate those in an effective way. And beyond even job-related matters, there are those things that do take place in relationships that at times there has to be a separation. And we're seeing one right here. And I want us to think about it in terms of faith and walking with God. Because there are times when we have to go our own way in our relationship with God to develop and, in a sense, go to the next level. You see that when Lot left, God then comes on and says, now he expands the promise and the relationship. I'm going to give you all of this. Walk through the land. Look at it. Every point on the compass will be yours. And Lot has to go through his road to learn what he has to learn as well. And so that brings me to ponder point number two, all right, for us to think about. I have to get a new one up here. Well, we won't get that one. Ah, green. Ponder number two. Think about the time when you grew an understanding about yourself, God, and the Bible. Think about some point where, because of what you learned, what you were going through, what was developing your life, you went to another level of understanding, all right? Where you grew in understanding. What brought it about? What was going on? Was it a job change? Was it a time of change in the church? Was it a time of change even in your own family? Maybe when your kids left home, you had an empty nest. Maybe it was a time of you know, one of those stages of life where other things come in. Was it with someone? Was another person involved? Your wife, your husband? Or was it done alone? Think about a time when you grew an understanding about yourself. Because in this episode here, both men had to separate and go their way. Now in verse 18, I want to call your attention to something. We're going to come back to it. It says that Abraham moved his tent and he went and he dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre. It's one of those little phrases that you just kind of read over. We'll come back to it. You might just kind of note that we're going to come back to it here in a little bit. But trees are interesting to kind of note in the story of Abraham and what took place there. Let's go on to chapter 14. Lot gets himself captured, and Abraham has to rescue him. And what takes place here is rather interesting. Some of the kings of the valley were there. They gathered and made war among themselves. They joined together. And they went up. And they took all the goods. In verse 12 it says, as the cities were ransacked, they also took Lot, Abraham's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. So Lot got caught up in these skirmishes among these various towns and it calls kings. It's interesting just to note something here as a sidebar. It talks about in verse 2, the king of Sodom, Birsha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Adma. And you read these and you think, wow, kings, you know, realms, kingdoms. No, they're more like mayors of very small cities. You can go to these places today, and I've stood on the big pile of dirt that a current archaeologist is excavating, has been for the last 7 or 8 years, where he thinks Sodom is or was. And he's probably right. But it's on the north side of the Dead Sea. Different from the traditional site if you look on your Bible maps. But I've stood on that hill a couple of times, and it is a hill that frankly would take in about where our office is here down to the bottom of our property that slopes off through the woods over here down to the bottom of the hill. Maybe not quite that far, maybe not quite that wide. And that was the city of Sodom. the circumference of it, or the area that it covered. Hardly more than a kingdom. So the king of Sodom was, and the king, these kings were basically mayors, okay, with fancy titles. But they warred, and they went back and forth. All right, to get back to the story, they took Lot, and they departed. Well, Abraham, feeling a sense of responsibility, he heard about it, verse 14, and he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his own house, and he went in pursuit as far as Dan, which is into the north. And so he acts. Abraham is a man of action. He's decisive. He saw something that had to be done, and he got it done. He didn't quibble. He didn't wait. He immediately gathered up 318 of his own men at his own expense, which tells you the amount of wealth that he had, and they saddled up, and they rode out. Love a good Western. And he got Lot back and defeated everyone as the story goes on. As Abraham comes back, he runs into Melchizedek in the story here, the king of Salem in verse 18. And it's here that Abraham tithes. And this is the first reference we have of tithing, which if you, as we understand and know the teaching about tithing in the Bible, you talk about a relationship builder with God. When it comes to our money, or better put, our realization that that 10% is not our money, but it is God's, that really begins to develop a relationship with God in our walk. And to do that, not just once, not just twice, but over and over again. This is where we begin to see a man of faith giving to God as he recognizes in Melchizedek who he is, and he tithes to him off the spoils that he has. But Abraham would not take of his personally from these spoils, because they offer some to him. In verse 21, the king of Sodom said to Abraham, "Give me the persons and take the goods for yourself." All right? And Abraham says, "No, I've raised my hand to God, the possessor of heaven and earth, and I'll take nothing." I like this phrase back in verse 21. "Give me the persons, take the goods for yourself." It reminds me of that line from The Godfather. You know, leave the guns, take the cannolis. This guy's saying here, leave the persons, take the goods. And Abraham won't have any part in it. It's just not the way he is wired at that particular point in time. In these events, we see again Abraham recognizing who God is. He's a man of integrity in that he will not take something that he does not feel rightfully is his, even though by the rules of war he could. He doesn't do that except to recompense some of those that have gone along with him. And so he's building faith. And we see that as he recognizes who Melchizedek is and what he does there. Faith is built a bit at a time by the events that take place in our lives and how we react to them, how we respond when our belief in God might be tested at a time of illness or a time of a job loss or some other type of crisis. And we are tempted sorely to discount and even to the point of unbelief that there is a God or that He's working with us. Maybe we think that, you know, all we've done is for nothing in our life of obedience. And even at that moment, our faith is being formed and stretched and shaped and tested, just as Abraham's is here. And the response in the moment is what tells us. Here Abraham did several things. He went and rescued Lot, but then he gave to God what was God's, and then he refused to take any more than that for himself after he could have done so. These were decisions that he had to make in the moment as the offer came to him, as the situation developed before him at this point. And we do see a man that is beginning to develop faith. And so here's another point to consider, or another point to ponder. We'll call this one number three. Ponder point number three. Think about a major challenge to your faith. to your belief, to your conviction. What was it? A challenge, a test to faith. Maybe something recently, 2 years ago, at some point in your life, what was it? How did you respond? Did you doubt? Did you draw back? How did you come out? Did you come out stronger than you were before? We've all had challenges to our faith. We've all had times of stress that have put our convictions to the test. How did you react? Did you go inward? Did you go into depression? Did you skip out? Was that a time that you just took a hike, took a break, sabbatical from church, from God? Did it drive you to your knees? Did it cause you, did you come out of it more convicted that you have a God who hears? See, faith is built by degrees, and the journey and the walk that we have with God, becoming like Abraham, and that is having a friendship and a relationship with God, comes by degree, and it comes out of a test. Back in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 34, it says of those who are these examples of faith in this chapter, Hebrews chapter 11, verse 34. They quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong. Out of weakness were made strong. Abraham was strong, he was weak, he lied about his wife, but he came out of it and he was stronger. He made a decision to separate with Lot, and he was stronger. Out of weakness comes strength, if we recognize it, confront it, and deal with it. And so think about something that has been a challenge to you and to your faith. Well, let's go into chapter 15 here. In this, again, we see an expansion of the promise. In verse 1, after these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, "Do not be afraid, Abraham. I am your shield, your exceeding great reward." Now, when God says, "I am your shield," that is one of the names that God reveals himself by. It's the El Shaddai God. I am your shield, your protector. Like that piece of armament that Paul talked about as part of the shield of faith, but a part of the armor of God. God says, "I am your protector. I am your shield." And this is how he reveals himself. You see, Abraham he came out of a past where they worshiped many gods with many names. And he began to worship one God who had many names. And this is one of them right here that whereby he is revealed, the El Shaddai God. What Abraham does then, he says, "Well, look, all right. God, what will you give me, seeing I go childless, and the heir of my house now is Eliezer of Damascus, his servant?" And Abraham said, "Look, you've given me no offspring. Indeed, one born in my house is my heir." And the word of the Lord came to him, saying, "This one shall not be your heir, but one who will come from your own body shall be your heir." He brought him out, and he said, "Look now toward heaven and count the stars if you're able to number them." It wasn't enough to not be able to number the dust of the earth. Now you can't number the stars of heaven. So shall your descendants be. But Abraham was afraid of being childless. Here's the God that he'd listened to and made the big move. This is the God he tithed to. This is the God who said now that your descendants will be as the dust of the earth, innumerable. And he challenges him and doubts him on whether or not he will provide an heir. His property's at stake. And whatever thoughts that he had been turned upside down. If he thought Lot would inherit that, that's not going to happen now. But Abraham has to come to God now and trust him, who says that he is his shield and that he will do as he promises to do. And Abraham has to now learn to trust in this El Shaddai that he's revealed as and build a deep, lasting trust in this God. Trust is a very important part of a relationship and of walking not only with God, but walking with each other. If you don't trust somebody, guess what? That walk's going to be very challenging and very difficult if it happens at all, that relationship. A marriage can't be built without trust. Family can't operate without trust. No organization can operate without trust. An organization that does not trust is just about dead in the water. Every organizational management book that you will read lists this as one of the most critical aspects of a sound and a healthy organization. Whether it's business, whether it's in church, whether it's in our personal relationships, trust must be at the heart of everything. Abraham had to learn how to trust God. Without it, there would be no father of the faithful. None of what he was saying was going to come to pass. We have to be able to fully, completely trust God that he will do with us as he says, that he will be our shield and protector, and that we can walk with him day by day with that. As you and I think about this, looking at the story of Abraham, there are some situations I realize at times that we come into where it's only God and the trust that we have him in him to deliver us, to be with us, to protect us, to see us through. There are certain situations that we will come into where we have to trust God to understand our heart, who we are, our motives, and the desire that we have that it is right, that it is good, when maybe no one else does. And there's no one else that's going to deliver you. No minister, not even your best friend. There can be certain situations where you get into and you have to recognize them. I really truly believe this, that you can't go and beyond a surface talk to somebody and say, look, I've got this trial, will you pray for me? But you can't go back and go back and go back and look to them for a solution. Because either God's going to deliver you, provide the answer, work it out, because you've done all you can do, there's nothing else that can be done, not even your best friend, your BFF, can help you. You have to put it all in God's hands. Which brings us to ponder point number 4, for you to think about. Have you ever been up against a wall where only God could show you the way forward? Only God can show you the way forward, and you have to rely on him. When you came there, did you then begin to look at God as your true shield, your El Shaddai, your protection? Which amounts to a shield of faith, as Paul describes it in Ephesians 6. Did you look to God only? Did you quit gossiping about it? Did you quit undermining somebody else? And did you then put it completely in God's hands? And did you go on your knees in prayer repeatedly and talk to God about it, knowing that the solution would only come from him? Frankly, we as humans often make a big mess out of our spiritual growth opportunities, what I call our SGOs, spiritual growth opportunities, when they come, because maybe we don't even recognize them. So many of them come and boom, went by 100 miles an hour. We didn't even see it. But God in his mercy gives us more. You know, Abraham took some matters in his own hands, notably the one with where he went into Hagar after God had made the promise of a son. And Sarah says, here, take my handmaid. And Abraham trots off to the next tent and does it. 9 months later, here's Ishmael. He took it into his own hands. You know the problems that ensued from that. Again, sometimes we try to work it out ourselves, what God has promised to do for us. That path, that walk, isn't always the best. You have to take it to God. Let's move on to the next chapter, 18. Chapter 18 of Genesis. This is one I really like. This is where Abraham negotiates with God. You know the story. Three men appear to him, and as he's sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day, in verse 1, he lifts up his eyes, and he comes to understand that one of them is the Lord. And two of them, after they have a big meal, two of them go on down to Sodom because God is going to destroy Sodom. And they, in verse 16, they go on. But God says, Shall I hide from Abraham what I'm doing? In verse 17, since Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, I've known him in order that he may command his children. And so he explains what he's going to do. And the men turned away in verse 22 and went towards Sodom. But Abraham stood before the Lord. He stood up and he stood before God. And he came near and he begins to negotiate with him. Would you destroy the righteous with the wicked? Suppose, think about it, God, if there's 50 righteous people in the city, would you destroy the place and not spare it for 50 righteous people? And then begins the negotiations. 50-50, do I hear 50? No. Do I hear 45? No. Do I hear 40? No. Will you do it for 30? No. 20? No. All right, I'll do it. Well, maybe there's not 20. He comes down to 10. Will you do it for 10? Well, all right, I'll do it for 10, but we know that there's not 10. And God goes his way as soon as he's finished speaking with Abraham in verse 33, and Abraham returned to his place. And you know the story. There were not 10 people. In fact, only 3 walked out of Sodom. 4 left, 1 turned back, turned to a pillar of salt, Lot's wife, the other 3 escaped. But here's the point about the story. Abraham negotiates with God. Now that took boldness. That took boldness. And this is the third quality that I'm drawn to about him. And what it takes to have a relationship with God. I think sometimes we miss this point. I think God likes us to stand in front of him, as Abraham did, and approach God in a direct, face-to-face manner. Honest, authentic, expecting a relationship on that basis, as well as answers to real things in our life. And some of the real challenges that we do deal with. That's authentic Christianity. That's a real relationship with God. And if there is something we are struggling with, if there is something that we cannot overcome, if there is something we must understand, if we are to remain faithful to God in obedience, in a life of faith, we have to do what it takes to get it done. And counseling will do some part of it. Prayer will be a part of it. Encouragement from each other will be a part of it. Knowledge will be a part of it. Raw guts and boldness may get us over the hump, because at some point we have to cut the cord and just do it. And have the type of boldness of an Abraham who stood up before God and tried to negotiate for the lives of people in a city, out of his sheer humanity. But he had the boldness to say to God, you can't do this. Would you do that and be a righteous judge of all the earth? What might be so vitally important in your life? And this is the next point to ponder, number 5. What might be so vitally important in your life that you would boldly approach God in prayer, in fasting, in a dedicated, devoted period of time that amounted to the type of an attitude that Abraham had here when he negotiated with God. Not that you're going to negotiate away sin or negotiate your way to grace. That's going to be God's free gift to us, ultimately. We can't finagle that. But doing what Abraham did in the spirit of what he did, knowing even that God is not bound to negotiate with us because he is the righteous judge of all the earth. And even, you know, God might even already have the answer, but I wonder sometimes if he wants to see how long we will stay with him. How long, how fervently, how hard we will go to him to get an answer, to get to a point where we with what we need. In a boldness like Abraham did, where he stood in front of God and negotiated. There are some things that we will struggle with in this life that will only be overcome with that type of an approach that incorporates the needs, the spiritual disciplines of prayer, study, fasting, and anything else we'll throw into the mix to get to a point where there is overcoming. That's what we're talking about here. That's what's important. You know, Abraham looked at his encounters with God as something that was sacred, that were beyond the temporal world. And I think that that's how we have to look at our relationships with God as well. You know, if you go back to Genesis 12, verses 7 and 8, he built it, he went into the land and he built an altar. God appeared to him, and he said, I'll give you and your descendants this land. And there he built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. Over in verse 13, chapter 13, verse 18, in the same location, he comes back, and he built an altar before God. He built an altar before God. Verse 4. Of chapter 13, to the place of the altar which he had made there first, and Abraham called on the name of the Lord. You know, an altar was a pile of stones probably at that time. And he cut the wood, put it on there, prepared it. Then he took a lamb or a heifer and killed it, cut it up, slapped the raw meat on this burning fire. Took a lot of work to get to that point. And that was a sacrifice. That was an act of devotion to reflect the sacred relationship that he had with God in calling upon the name of the Lord, which is what he said that he did in verse 4 here. Abraham called on the name of the Lord in this whole process. To him, that was a sacred time, requiring an altar, a sacrifice, and a prayer. He knew God by many names. And so many times he builds an altar like this. And he makes a sacrifice, which required not only work, but also a realization that, man, there's a lot of money going up in smoke here. A few hundred dollars in meat. And he's doing this throughout the whole story. He has an encounter with God. He calls on the name of God. His whole life was like that. Our whole life is a sacrifice. We're living sacrifices, Romans 12:1 tells us. And it requires that we think about that covenant and that relationship with God in that way. In chapter 21 and verse 33, one last example here. This is after working out a relationship with Abimelech. And it's an interesting story, begins in verse 22, but when it was all done, verse 32, they made a covenant. He made a covenant with Abimelech in this area of Beersheba. Two strong men, Abimelech, Abraham, they come to make a covenant, an agreement. God's made covenants and expanded it with Abraham through the story here, but now Abraham makes one with Abimelech that basically is an agreement between the two as to how they would conduct their business. And in verse 33, Abraham plants a tamarisk tree in Beersheba and there called on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. referenced the tree back in Genesis 12, verses 6 through 8. There are other references to where a tree is involved. Not that it was a place of worship. They didn't worship the tree. Pagans later come along and they worship the tree. In this case, though, we find, remember, Abraham was sitting under a tree in the heat of the day when God came to him along with the two other angels before they destroyed Sodom. Here's a covenant that is made, and Abraham plants a tree, large tree, would eventually become. And he calls on the name of the Lord in it. And this tree is associated with this covenant, which is an agreement that seals a relationship. Here's the last point to ponder. Number 6. What relationships do we have that require a covenant? Baptism? Is that a covenant? Marriage? Is that a covenant? Is friendship a covenant? It's what we have right here in the story of Abraham and Abimelech. Our friendship is a very important covenant. How about our fellowship? How about being together in the church and what we bind ourselves together and agree to do in terms of our collective mission before God? That's a covenant too. And those are all sealed in various forms. Baptism, that relationship with God is sealed through the act of baptism, laying on of hands. A marriage relationship is two people standing before witnesses and vowing before God. Friendships develop in a little different way, but they become covenants as well in time if they're really deep ones. And the fellowship we have among ourselves is an extremely important one as well. And when we stop and think about those, every one of them needs to be honored, because they reflect a relationship not only with each other, but with God. And they all form a part of our walk with life. And every one of them takes courage and trust and boldness to accomplish and to be a part of. And every one of them we have to approach just like Abraham did. When we do, we are walking with God. We are becoming a friend of God. And that is worth the journey. That is worth the effort, the sacrifice of a living life, a living sacrifice for us all to be a part of. Those are some things to think about. Not all the big ticket items of Abraham's life, but some of them, along with a few other matters that hopefully will draw us into an understanding of the relationship that we have with God and how we walk with Him. So we'll end it there tonight. Thank you all for coming out, and be sure to drive safely on your way home. And we will see you next time. We will be back here in 2 weeks for the next Bible study in the series.